nine-wave signal generator was exciting the capacitor plates, and the oscilloscope was displaying the output of a voltage probe and a current probe connected to the appropriate points on that capacitor network. That's what I think was taking place. So a simple VI curve on a nonlinear capacitor will display that hysteresis curve, and maybe that's what that was. He didn't give us enough information or enough close-up photography to confirm that it was a voltage current curve. But that's what I think it was, Wesley. N2XJN, K2RIW.
We have Glenn, who is the most respected by me professional in the area of materials and technology of this kind. I wonder what Glenn has to say about ferroelectric capacitors. And to XGN.
Let's see if Glenn is on frequency. KC2QIQ, are you about tonight? K2RIW? It looks like he may not be here tonight, Wesley. Is there more than one YouTube video of the operation of that ferroelectric capacitor? And do any of them, from your research, show any close-up of the actual setup where we could figure out where the probes to that oscilloscope were connected that gave him that hysteresis curve? I wonder if any of those videos show that, or if we look at it slowly, frame by frame, I wonder if we can figure it out from the video that is there. Over to you, Wesley.
Well, there is another video. There are a few videos only about it, and another video just shows the stages, like a graphical stages of changing the pattern, why the polarization happened. So within a microsecond, the stage is being changed. So it's very much rapid, but the change of that change that already happened is taking a lot of time. So while I was watching that 30 seconds video, I saw that coming back to the previous stage takes even up to 20 seconds. Very interesting material. I think we are facing a complete change of the technology. The application is endless. What I'm going to be, because I was working today on that material, what I'm going to be trying to do is get more information about all of that next week and try to give some specifics, as I believe we should not neglect that because we're going to have it everywhere, actually, in computers, especially as a new form of memory. Let me jump. In power supplies, in sensors, in mechanics, in microwaves, in radars, and eventually, if the prediction or at least the theory is standing that these two stages could be mixed together and preventing back EMF, we're dealing with a very much efficient device. I'm not trying to state efficient than more than the than a factor of one. Back to you, and to Adrian.
On that video where the hysteresis curve did slowly change, I had the impression he was turning on or off that electric stove heater element. The temperature of the substance being studied was changing. And he did state that there's a very specific, or one of the articles states, there's a very specific temperature of 322 degrees where it changes state.
He had the thermometer, the temperature meter on the top, and it was showing the temperature dropping down. Now, the hysteresis change from the circular to the very much square-like or rhombic, if you could help me with the wording, like, very much unusual. I didn't see something like that in my whole life. Back to you, and thanks for you.
Yeah, it did make sort of a rhombic, a rhombus, or a diamond-shaped display curve on the oscilloscope screen as a function of temperature. Parallelogram? Yeah, sort of a parallelogram, sort of a diamond-shaped thing, sort of a rhombic device, display. And so it changed as a function of temperature. So, and he was pouring the powder onto these capacitor plates that were on this heating element. So temperature is a big factor. Now, as a memory device, I wonder what you believe, Wesley, makes it very desirable as a memory device.
Okay.
Is it better in volatility? Is it better in memory duration? Is it better in memory energy? Is it better in memory contamination in a strong electric fields? I mean, modern day flash memories give you a tremendous number of bits of memory in a very small package. As a memory device for a computer, a ferroelectric, what is the advantage? Over to you, Wesley.
Yeah, I have sent you also the material standing about, from Square Loop Magnetic Logic Circuits by Edward P. Stabler. And what is very much unique about this this material is that keeps you the computer shut and gives you information about ferrites and ferroelectric capacitors made from ferromagnetic materials. Now this is interesting. Ferroelectric capacitor made from ferromagnetic materials and possessing bulk characteristics which are usually referred to square loop properties. Maybe Jack? Of course it was recognized for some time that these properties are capable with with digital device requirement. So the paper that I sent you attempts to categorize the various methods which are utilized in device synthesis and introduce equivalent circuit modules of the devices to determine some of their attributes and limitations. And of course it is essentially non-linear resistive and reactive network whose parameters are determined by internal state of the device and by its present state of excitation. That's what I was mentioning before. For the sake of the simplicity, I would say that the properties of the element square loop material are threshold memory and saturation. So, when we deal with the device that is able to memorize stage, that we are able to build even now, as of today, we are capable to build the hard drive, they don't have any disk, any motors, anything that is moving, solid state memory storages at very, very high capacity. And being able to replace the traditional hard drives. And it is happening. It is happening right now. I have sent you probably around 30-35 links, different links, about this material. So, my understanding is that we should now change the subject, because we don't have a dick, and we are not able to cover his knowledge, but the subject is definitely very much interesting. Back to you, Dick, and to Jim.
Welcome to the Rashley.
I'm not sure that I see a big advantage yet of using this as a memory device, because I don't see it as being more reliable or smaller in size. Right now, one of the main things that people are looking for when it comes to memory devices is how many megabits or gigabits can they package into a small package. That's bit density seems to be the big thing that the memory companies are working on these days. And does the ferroelectric capacitor work at a smaller size? I'm a little bit skeptical of that, because the flash memory individual bits these days are getting down to very microscopic scales, and the reliability of those memories seems to be extremely good. The reliability of hard drives is extremely good. In the old days, everybody used to do a tape backup of their hard drive, knowing that it's only a matter of time before the hard drive is going to fail. There's a large number of optimistic people, and I'm one of them, who don't do very much backing up these days. And so we're probably making the wrong assumption that our hard drive is never going to fail. Well, you use it long enough and they're all going to fail. But if the failure period is long enough, if the mean time between failures is a big enough number, and if the event is infrequent, and if the amount of time required to do the backup is so significant, an awful lot of people don't do backup. I think the people who do backup these days simply do a pair of hard drives and dump the data from one to the other.
I have the Department of Army Research Office, ARO, and I have this ferro-based system engineered by Microstructural Complexity, and it is specially applied to that what I have mentioned, and apart from that, also to create the novel microactuators and integration to multifunctional devices, such as memory storage. Also, another project about the hard drive, Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in Sandia. So we have a major players in this area. It is not only that we are able to create something that is huge like from the video, but we are able to play with the microstructure of it. But
let me ask the question among the people who are present here tonight. Every one of us these days are using computers, with rare exception, for writing email, for doing web searches, for talking to our friends, for sending text messages and whatever. Of the people within the sound of my voice right now, how many of them are doing hard drive backup? And of the ones who are doing hard drive backup, what method of backup are they using? So if you've been backing up your hard drive, or if you've made a conscious decision not to back up your hard drive, give me a call at us right now and tell me your thinking on this subject. K2RIW in the TechNet.
This is K2KEY.
Go ahead, Mel. How do you back up your hard drive? How often do you do it? Over to you, Mel.
Well, most of my work, a lot of my things, I'm still from, unfortunately, from the old papers trail, you know, files of file cabinets and folders. So the only thing I do back up is in my ham shack. I have the logging program, and ham utilities that I find, you know, it's convenient, of course, to have the logging program, but I can research out, you know, somebody by name, by call letters, by location. So I have on that about 15,000 contacts, I believe, somewhere in that neighborhood. It's been over many years, and it's an old computer. See, that's another thing, a very old computer. It's an old 286. So I back it up every so often, Dick, because Otherwise, I'm going to be lost if I lose that computer over.
Okay, you back up that 286 of yours. Do you back it up with tape? Do you back it up with another hard drive? Do you back it up by making hard copy? How do you back that one up, Mel? Go ahead.
Okay, well, I backed it up. You'll laugh, but I have an Epson. That old computer has two drives. Well, I had one drive originally. Had a 5 1/4 floppy. Then I added in the a new one, you know, the new 2 1/2, whatever it is. Yes, I think what they call it, 2 1/2. Yeah, 2 1/2 floppy. So I'm using the 2 1/2. So now I got these fifth on this, and I have another put aside, another unit that has that can convert from that to a DVD if I want, which so far I haven't done. I just got a few discs that are piled up, Dick, but I guess as long as you got the information, you can always retrieve it over.
Now, is it possible that your backup hard drive is 3 1/4? I think that's the next size smaller than the 5 1/2 floppies, the so-called 3 1/4. That's the one that's about 3 1/2 inches wide, 3 1/2 inches high, which they call the 3 1/4. Is that what you're using as backup thumbnail? And even those are becoming rare these days. Everybody's doing everything on CD-ROMs. Go ahead.
Yeah, of course. Everything was coming through. You know, they used to send you those discs in the mail to do all kinds of things. You know, everything came with one of those discs. You know, I could say they mailed them to you. I wound up with a pile of them. All I have to do is, you know, is rewrite them. That's it. Yeah, after 3 1/4, I don't know why I've got 2 1/2. 3 1/4 and 5. With 3 1/4, I think, and 5 1/2. What was 5 1/2, I guess, was the original PC came through with Dick over.
If anybody is familiar with network drives.
Back in the old days, that so-called 5 1/2 was really an 8-inch. Started off as 8-inch, went down to 5 1/2, I think. And then the next step was the 3 1/4. And after that, everything is these laser burnable things. And I'm hearing some nasty stories about these laser CD-ROM discs that people who have put data on those, it's only good for a certain number of years, the writable ones. Particularly if you let one of those get exposed to the sun, you can lose all your data. So when it comes to long-time storage, right now, I wonder although they're much lower in energy density, it's quite possible the 3 1/4s are much more reliable. Anybody got any opinions on that? Give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
KC2SYL. Name is Bill with a comment.
Go right ahead, Bill. KC2SYL, K2RIW.
Hi, good evening to everyone on the net. And part of the work that I used to do involved contingency planning and recovery planning. I can assure you that major corporations do back up their data quite regularly. In fact, there's some regulations that apply, especially to financial institutions and possibly other corporations. And we can discuss that later if you like. In terms of the individual PC user, there are several methods of backup. As Mel indicated, the floppy drives, although the technology is old, it's pretty well proven. The newer backups are the flash drives, and you can purchase a flash drive for a relatively small amount of money, which can create a lot of storage area. And individuals, including myself, I just back up my documents. I have a file on my PC, or on my PCs that contain the documents and the really important information. I just back that up on a regular basis, and I take that flash drive and I store it some other place. There are other companies that provide online storage. If you have access to the internet, you can actually send the data, your data from your private PC, to these companies, and they will store it for you. There are many of them. You can do a search on it. And I don't know the names of them completely, but I know several individuals who use that service. And so far, it seems to be reliable. I also have a comment on emails, which I'll, you know, do the next time around. This is Bill, and the call sign is KC2SYL.
Adrian with the question.
Yeah, okay, well, hold on a minute there, Wesley. Good information there, Bill, and that is the online storage, I think some people call that cloud storage, but I'm not sure on that one. And it sounds like you believe a good number of private citizens doing their own PC storage are doing it on flash drive. However, what is the reliability and longevity of the flash drive? If I take all of my family photographs and put them onto a flash drive, and if I want my grandchildren to be able to see them 30 years from now, what's the probability that all of those photographs on that flash drive 30 years from now have not lost any of that data due to cosmic ray exposure or whatever? Over to you on that one, Bill. K2SYL? KC2SYL. K2RIW?
K2RIW, this is KC2SYL. In terms of the flash drive, just like any component that you know, is magnetic, if you care for it properly, I believe the life, I'm not going to say it's infinite, but it could be a very long time. You can obviously you can't expose it to extreme temperatures or extreme cold. That would certainly possibly destroy some of the characteristics of the compound itself or the memory substance. But if they're cared for properly, I believe the storage is probably a very long time. And if that doesn't satisfy requirements, you could always purchase a newer flash drive and just copy the items to the newer media and save that in a secure environment, such as a controlled environment or you know, a safety deposit box. There are also companies that provide storage for your personal papers and personal items, obviously that you have to pay for, but they will store them in a secure and environmentally controlled area. There are several on Long Island. So I think that the medium life is probably very long, unless it's been abused. Back to the net.
Okay, I've got a problem, Bill, and maybe you can straighten me out on this one. At the microscopic level, where each individual bit is being stored into a so-called flash drive, isn't that one or zero bit really a voltage that's on a small miniature capacitor? Doesn't that voltage on that capacitor slowly leak away in time? 10 years from now, what's the probability that all of the bits of all of those billions of capacitors that represents the favorite photograph of my daughter's wedding, how do I know that all of those capacitors, not none of them, are going to be discharged 10 years from now? Am I wrong on the flash drive is really a voltage storage on a capacitor for each individual bit? KC2SYL, K2RIW, go ahead, Bill.
I'm not that familiar with the technology in terms of the storage media being a capacitor. I would tend to say that it is not. Rather, when the storage is done, or when the backup is done, I believe it alters the state of the, I'm going to say the matrix of the substance. And I think you can have a, you know, a pretty high confidence rate that the item, the storage media, will not deteriorate as long as it's not subjected to extremes. But I could be wrong on that. I'm not sure if it, you know, it's the same. It's not the same substance as a, for example, a rechargeable battery or alkaline battery, which would deteriorate after a while or lose its power. I have to defer to other individuals who are more knowledgeable about the solid state, the structure of those items. But I do believe that it's not a capacitor,
but a change to the actual molecular or atomic structure of the substance itself. Back to that. Bill, how many times can I rewrite a particular section of a flash drive? In other words, if I buy a good brand name, do they tell me I can write and rewrite that particular section 1,000 times with no change in the error rate when I do that? Is there a rating like that, Bill? Go ahead.
Okay, very good.
I'm sure there is. I'm not familiar with the rating, but if you do, obviously, if you do a search, you Google it, you'd probably find that information rather quickly. I think another station had a comment. Back to net.
You got it, Eric.
Well, the interesting thing about flash drives is you're thinking of it as a... you're probably thinking of it as sort of like a sample and hold kind of deal. Flash drives are really MOSFETs, okay? And the insulating layer of the, where the gate of the transistor is, that's where the charge is stored. So, in theory, there's things that are supposed to be able to hang on for a long, 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 long time. And actually, I've never seen a flash drive fail. There is a, you know, it's the insulating oxide in the gate, and the way you make it go away is by quantum tunneling. So that should give you an idea of how it is as opposed to a capacitor, which which will leak over time.
Comment, Dick? Yeah, I'll be back to you in a second. Comment. The quantum tunneling allows me to put a positive or a negative voltage, so to speak, onto that capacitor, and that is the bit of storage. To my knowledge, a flash drive does not have a holding voltage. There is no power supply. There is no onboard battery. So each individual bit, by way of the tunneling process, is really a stored voltage on the equivalent of a capacitor. If I wait long enough and let enough cosmic rays in the natural background of my environment to hit that flash drive, I have heard a number of people, maybe they're pessimistic, telling me they wouldn't trust a flash drive beyond 10 years. Has anyone actually stated any kind of a warranty or guarantee for what bit error rate I get on a flash drive versus how many years versus how I store it? Over to you on that one, Eric. KE2EJ, KQRIW.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I agree with that guy. I wouldn't trust him for 5 years. But then again, you're going to have dynamic memory and static memory that's active, and the cosmic ray will come along and change a bit on you. I mean, that just happens naturally. Most people don't realize it. That's why memory has a, an MBTF and a bit error rate. That's why today's memory in computers actually have several parity bits, so it can determine whether or not that chunk of memory has gotten changed or not. If it was, with the dual parity bits, you can actually recover the data. So, as far as, I'm sure the manufacturers, if you look at their data sheet, they will give you the error rate.
Modern day memories, I suspect, are making a large amount of use of parity is nowhere near enough. Cyclic redundancy code, CDC, CRC, is nowhere near enough. For Kirby encoding techniques by which error correction can take place, I think are almost becoming like genetic material. Your genetic material has a lot of error correcting capability. Otherwise, the cells that get replaced every couple of weeks on almost all of your body would never look the same, if you know what I mean. So I am guessing that a large amount of error correcting background is taking place in all of that data. And I think that has a certain survival rate to it. But I had the impression from what you're saying, Eric, that you would worry that if your data was extremely important to your family or your business, that putting your backup memory into a flash drive and hoping it's going to be there one decade from now, I think you're saying you would not sleep easy on that one. Is that what you're saying, Eric? Go ahead.
I could probably qualify that, K2RWK2J, in terms of what is the data. I mean, if we're talking pictures, which has many redundant forms of error correction, I'm not going to worry so much. If we're talking about real, absolute data and values that are important to us, I think I would rather choose a better form of storage.
Okay, what is that better form of storage? If you want 10 or 20 year archival storage of, let's say, a spreadsheet that's got numeric data of extreme value to you, what is the better storage that you would use?
Now, you know, some people are going to say CD-ROM and DVD drives, and I trust that as little as I trust the flash memory. Because most people don't realize that recordable DVDs or recordable CDs are made with an organic die, and they change over time. I don't know, in this day and age, I mean, what I store my data on changes as the technology changes. Currently, I'm partial to using LTO drives, which, you know, you get a good 20, 30 years out of it. I mean, we're sucking stuff off from Kennedy 9-track drives that, you know, if the tape has been maintained properly, it's still good stuff. So, you know, it's pick your poison. Preferably, if it's important data, it will be with some kind of error correction or checksum or some Reed-Solomon or various different other methods of error correction, just in case. And, of course, if it's really important, you would probably want to keep more than one copy of it on two different formats. K2RW, K2J.
Well, one of the words you said was LTO drive. What does that stand for?
Linear tape. I forgot what the O stands for. Linear tape. Well, anyway, it was invented by IBM. It's what people are currently using. One LTO tape. LTO1 actually started out being 1 in 200 gigabytes. We're up to LTO5 now, which is like, 800 gigs on a tape. It's good stuff. We used to have stuff called DLP. There are a lot of different formats, and as the technology gets better, the density gets higher, and one thing about good old magnetic tape is you take care of it. It lasts one heck of a long time. The problem is formats change and algorithms change, and you know, 20 years from now you're going to be able to read it. And the way LTOs are, I suspect that's going to be the case.
Is LTO a sort of a helical scan like tape, Eric?
Negative. It's fixed head and linear. It's a linear track. Let me look it up. I'll tell you exactly what it is.
Okay, I think Bill wanted to give us some further words here. KC2SYL, K2RAW, go ahead, Bill.
This is KC2SYL. Well, I was just to use the example, too, of a transistor, as Eric mentioned. I've had transistor radios for a number of years, several decades, and they've been idle, typically, for quite a long time, you know, shoved in a closet someplace or in a drawer. You take them out, replace the battery, replace the power source, and they work. So I think we have to distinguish between the media storage compound or items of the chemical compound and see what the reliability of that is. And once again, as the technology for materials changes, the storage preferences and choices are going to change. And the other aspect is to make sure that the software will be available to decode that. And ultimately, if you want the ultimate safest, I think, medium storage, plain old paper, and if that's stored properly, probably won't deteriorate for centuries, as evidenced by some of the documents that were produced thousands of years ago. Back to Ned.
Open short.
What was that again? Something open source? Give us again, Eric.
LTO stands for Linear Tape Open, meaning it's a non-proprietary magnetic tape format that everybody's using. There's something called the LTO Consortium.
Yeah, nowadays, what's going on is that we want to store more and more megabytes and gigabytes. And therefore, simply saying that I'm going to make hard copy and store it on paper becomes less and less viable if I was running a really big organization. Where does all that vault space for all of that paper come from? How do I guarantee that it doesn't get disturbed by a flood, a fire, or whatever? So storing whole lots of data ain't easy. I know that Wesley has... I know that Wesley had a question along these lines. Go ahead, Wesley. N2XJN, K2RIW.
KC2QIQ.
You're the man we're looking for, so as soon as Wesley finishes asking his question, we're going to go back to you, Glenn. Go ahead, Wesley. You have no trouble talking over this guy. N2XJN, K2RIW.
N2XJN. Yeah, Glenn, you missed the whole story about four electric capacitors. As a matter of fact, we were talking about memory. The development of the LCD displays based on ferroelectric thin film capacitors is being developed right now. And another thing is that you have... that ferroelectric film also applied as a memory storage. I have sent you this information so you can look at it. Now, my question is at the nature of the network drives. I simply didn't use it, but I would appreciate if somebody would share the information. So it's a few computers, it's a one network drive, let's say 3 terabytes of data, and it can store the information. Let's say the hard drive failed. What then is going to happen to the data? Would I be able to retrieve that data with the original licensing for the programs that I have purchased for the particular computer, or how it works? And to share.
KC2SHQ.
KC2SHQ, go right ahead. Start off with your name, sir.
Tony in Regal Park. There is a standard now based upon LTO linear tape open called LTFS. IBM introduced it, pushed it, and we use that now standard for archiving video where a single one could be 400.
So LTFS, I think you're saying, has become a standard, Tony, and you believe that that's considerably better than the LTO one that Eric was talking about. Back to you, Tony.
LTFS is a standard based upon the LTO tape format, which enables what's called a self-describing tape. They took the idea of a little USB and expanded that to a self-describing tape.
Does anybody have a question, an answer to Wesley's question as to how he can get the data back into his network if it gets lost?
No, there's a number of ways to do that, provided, of course, you put it somewhere.
Now, give us some words on that one, Eric.
Well, there's companies that make money by offering to back up your computer and keep it stored in their facilities. And most of these companies have multiple sites, so they get a fire or they blow up in one place, they still have the data somewhere else. So most of the major corporations do that kind of thing. You store your data in multiple sites, so you're protected. The other way is to have Bernie set you up an FTP site somewhere else, then store your data there and then call it back. You know, there's cloud computing. There's a whole range of things, but, you know, it's all a matter of how much smarts you have and how many dollars you got to spend.
Eric, give me a quick definition of cloud computing or cloud storage, if there is such a thing.
Well, it's somebody who's probably better qualified to give you an answer on that, but it's the new thing. It goes anywhere from shared resources to shared memory locations.
WB2IKT with a comment on that one.
The memory storage on network, which is widely available. Does anybody have more experience with that? Because I had none.
So let me first pick up WB2IKT, I think it was. Start off with your name, sir.
His name is George. And the comment on cloud computing is that cloud computing is basically computing which is in the network, not done on your site. Done obviously in some kind of data center, but it's backed up across the web. You don't need any special client software to find it, because all the applications work off a regular web browser. So the whole point is that it's compatible with virtually any kind of device, be it Apple or a Windows-type PC or Ubuntu-type box for Linux or whatever, because the interface to all the software is a standard web browser. And cloud computing could be basically, it's stored somewhere on the network, you don't need to know where, and you don't need any special hardware to access it, because it all works over a browser. Back to that.
George, how much protection do I have if I sign up for my data storage with a particular company, a particular brand name, and if for some reason that particular company goes out of business? Do I still have complete access to my data?
It depends on how they go out of business. In all honesty, that's a business arrangement that you need to make. Hopefully that they have a succession plan. Or if they go out of business, they sell their assets to some other company. You know, a wise person doesn't put all his eggs in one basket. If you're going to back something up, I would suggest doing it in several places. A lot of people back up their software in their house, and then if they have a fire, they lose their data and they lose their backup. So off-site backup is necessary in order to have a backup that really works. And the financial industry has settled on 200 miles as the distance, because they figure that that amount of distance will keep one site safe from another's major, you know, natural cause type of that. Back then.
So the loss of a nuclear power station, a tsunami, a earthquake or whatever, a hurricane, is very unlikely to strike two sites that are more than 200 miles apart. I guess that's the philosophy. And it does sound like a pretty safe way to go. So, if I'm really worried about maintaining my data, I think you're telling me the recommendation, and maybe it's a mil-spec recommendation, to store it in at least two sites that are at least 200 miles apart. Is that one way of putting it, George?
That's fair. And again, for long term, and I've heard people say here, paper is safe. Digital formats are likely to change over a function of time. People who stored stuff on some of the early tape formats have problems because the readers for those things aren't made anymore, and they have to sort of get them from the junkyard, revive them if they're going to be read. The same thing is probably happening to various types of floppy disks. I know I have some 8-inch floppies over here that you can't find 8-inch floppy drives anymore. 5 1/4 ones are pretty much dead, and 3 1/2 ones are dying really fast. I don't think you... PCs haven't shipped with new ones for quite a while. So beware of shifting formats, because if you count on outboard media, on some kind of a storage media that's obsolete, you may have a hard time reading it when you want to. Nothing lasts forever. And getting stuff, even on DVDs and on CDs, if you're going to store them as archival material, you have to control the temperature and humidity, because temperature and humidity changes will cause the material in it over a function of many, many years to deteriorate. And not having that happen is really tough to do. You know, I guess it's called rust in most parts of the world, but I haven't seen any really good things long-term that prevent rust. Back to that.
KC2QAQ.
I'm going to pick up Glenn in a second. One last question, George. How long would you trust a flash drive to maintain your data if you happen to be a PC user that's primarily doing all of your backup on flash drive? How long would you start trust a flash drive, George?
I would not. And I don't think I'd trust it more than 5 years, given today's state-of-the-art. And that would be pretty much under controlled conditions, because honestly, it's probably the environment more than the device in many cases. You know, if you, you know, put it inside some kind of a temperature and humidity controlled room, it only takes one day or one incident when they go out of control and your data is lost. And when you bring the temperature and humidity back, the data doesn't come back. So think about that. It's really the place that you put it, and, you know, how safe can you trust a safe environment? You know, that's really tough to do.
But was I wrong in my earlier statement, though, George, that each individual bit of data in a flash drive is a quantum tunneling effect of putting a voltage onto a capacitor, and you'd like the voltage to stay on that microminiature capacitor forever, but isn't it slowly draining away? Over to you, George.
What you just described is DRAM, and they constantly refresh it. The mechanism that stores data on a flash drive is somewhat different, and I'm virtually sure it's not a capacitive type of a change. Occurs to me that a long time ago, some years ago, I read the way that it works, and I had the feeling it's actually changing the state of the molecular structure of the thing, and I have to go back and read it to give you a definitive answer, but I'm pretty sure it's not a capacitive type of thing.
Okay, we'll soon find out. Glenn, KC2QIQ, you've got it. Wait for the beeps. I didn't.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that I jumped in when I did. It was a very, very interesting conversation. But, Dick, dealing with companies like EMC, who are the largest storage companies in the world that, that deal in storing data, from my understanding with them, is tape is the worst, then to be followed by hard drives, which are a little bit better than the tape. And right now, as far as MTBF goes, it's the solid-state drives that actually have the largest MTBF. But interestingly enough, that isn't really the problem. Let me let it drop for a second. Excluding things like music and certain, you know, things like movies and other things like that, most forms of the data storage is changing all the time. I think it's pretty obvious for most people who've owned a computer that you don't use the operating system you did even 3 years ago. It's changing all the time. The data is always changing. So the backups are always changing. So certainly the more backups that are being done is really the security to data today. But as far as MTBF goes on drives, the solid-state devices today are up somewhere in the area of over 50,000 hours guaranteed. And I think typical proven is somewhere in the area of around 100,000 hours. That's what the way it's been going so far. And interestingly enough, if you take a data device like a flash drive, you store data on it, and then you put it in a little lockbox and leave it alone and don't let anything touch it, you can probably be quite secure that 10 years from now that data is going to be fine. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
You talked about 50,000 hours of guaranteed storage, which on the surface sounds real good. But because there's 8760 hours per year, 50,000 hours is only 5.7 years, Glenn. If I want to guarantee that my data is going to be there 10 or 20 years from now, I'm a little worried. What is the real mechanism by which each individual bit is being stored in a solid-state drive? Isn't it somewhat like a flash drive? I mean, it can't be held up by a dynamic RAM or a local battery. It can't depend on the battery. Isn't it, again, getting back to a voltage being stored on a capacitor, and you hope that capacitor for each individual bit doesn't disappear? What's the real data mechanism storage at the bit level in a solid-state drive? I'm ignorant of these things, Glenn, so I'm going to be asking some pretty dumb questions. KC2QIQ, K2LAW.
Well, let me tell you, Dick, I can pretty much guarantee you that there's not that many people that really know. And the answer to that is it's MOS and latch. And basically that's how the thing works. There's a MOS voltage that's initially set, but that MOS position of voltage, metal oxide silicon, when you set a voltage on it, it actually sets up a structure of latching in a mechanism. So it forces the state of more than one device. So it's not one capacitor. It's actually actually four. So when you create one data change for one bit, it's actually four charge positions. So that, you know, that stays a real long time. And keep another thing in mind here about MTBF. That's active rewriting, okay? As I said, if you listen to what I said earlier, the active rewriting life is 50,000 hours. If you just unplug it and you put it in the safe box, you could probably, you know, more than likely that thing is going to be there for 100 years. K2IW, KC2QIQ.
I wonder about that. 100 years. Whoa. Do you realize what that is, Glenn? Oh, I did something wrong here. Here we go. Good. 100 years is 876,000 hours. Would you trust any data storage mechanism other than hard copy paper, low acid paper, and a real well-protected vault? Would you trust any of these electronic storage media for 876,000 hours, almost a million hours? Over to you, Glenn. Granite tablets. If nobody breaks them, over to you, Glenn.
Well, unfortunately, my answer for you, Dick, is it's going to be philosophical. Of course I'm going to trust it. You've done MTBF calculations as well as I have, and if you look at a stack of transistors on a die that's sitting there, especially some MOS parts, and do an MTBF, I don't care which mill standard you use, and it's relatively close to room temperature, you know the numbers you're going to see, and they're going to be darn close. You're going to see a million hours of MTBF. It's not going to be the issue. And I'll tell you what's really going to be the issue. It's that you're going to be lucky if you can find a device 100 years from now that's going to be able to play that data. That's going to be your real issue, not the storage and how long the data is going to last. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
KC2WIE.
WIE recognized. Get to you in a second. When it comes to a transistor being useful a million hours from now, I believe that. But all that transistor has to do to be useful a million hours from now is to still have a source, drain, and gate, or still have an emitter, base, and collector that's still functioning. That's not data storage. Data storage means I'm taking some particular gigabit, and there's a gigabit of them, and a giga number of them, and each one of them has something that I call 1 or 0, which most likely is a voltage. I'm not really changing whether or not there's phosphor molecules there or silicon molecules there. I'm really applying something that is like a voltage, obvious by the fact that I can rewrite it every microsecond or even every nanosecond, if you know what I mean. Do you really trust the voltage that you put onto some object to be there a million hours from now? I'm very troubled by that one. Over to you for a quick comment on that one, Glenn, before we go over to WIE. You got it, Glenn.
Yeah, completely confident, Dick, because I'll tell you, if you look at the structure and how the thing works, once it's held into a locked or a latched charge in one end or the other, and you look at the Q of that MOS structure, there's nothing inside there, and you've got four areas to hold that logic. And okay, maybe the amplitude might be a little bit different over time, but if you're figuring out where that voltage is going to be in a million hours, I don't see any problem with it. I mean, unless something, a physical event, happens on the outside to change it, which is more likely than the gate by itself. I mean, if you just leave it there, and you know the MOS is designed properly, and that structure, you know, for memory, and it's left there and it's latched in that one position, I would imagine that very, very low energy, high Q state, it's going to stay like that a real long time. And the calculations are going to come out to about a million hours. But more than likely, as I said, what's really going to be the problem, Dick, is not going to be that. The issue is going to be 100 years from now. It's like now, try to find a phonograph from the beginning of the century that can play those early photographs, phone recorded messages by Edison. Good luck. 100 years from now, it's hard enough to find something that's going to play back Windows 95 stuff for you anymore, or anything from DOS. K2RIW, KC2, QIQ.
I'm going to certainly agree with you when it comes to protocol and formats and whatever. Are they going to be here, just like you gave an example of DOS and CPM and whatever? And can we go back to those? Of course, that's troublesome. But where you use the word latch, that's like a JK flip-flop. It's like a flip-flop. I can latch a flip-flop, but it only stays latched because of the voltage feedback mechanism if the power supply is there. If I have no external or internal power supply, what does the word latch mean? Over to you, Glenn.
Yeah, that's called active latching, but there's also a non-active type of latching where basically you can take a group of gates and a diode structure. It's usually a gate and a diode, and basically what will happen is when you set something, you set one logic position in, you've got a diode backward going to the front device, so that this way you would actually have to force a high voltage logic to create it to change again, which is the reason why all of the flash logic works, because if you didn't do that, just rubbing the thing on your pants, you'd lose your data. And as we all know, and with everybody who's using flash drives out there, it doesn't happen. And the reason why is because when you create that first high voltage charge on the first device, it has to be in a certain sequence. It basically holds a logic charge in one direction through a diode down the other side, and then recharges the other cell. So it's actually like a cascading group of cells, and they all have to flip in one direction. And then that basically holds that data bit. Now, it just stays like that. But it's not a hard biased kind of a latch. It's a like a cascading arrangement. And I think I sent you an email a while back that they kind of explained that structure and how that works. But once that cascade is like that, I mean, and you look at the queue of those MOS cells, they're going to stay like that a real long time, Vic. K2RIW, KC2, QIQ.
Repeat to IKT with a reference. IKT recognized, but you got Eric ahead of you. KC2WIE, go ahead, Eric.
Good evening, gentlemen. Just a quick comment regarding, you know, my personal use of these storage devices. And in terms of, you know, the time that I've had these documents stored. And, you know, as was mentioned, as technology evolves, this data has to be transferred into what the current medium, is at the time. I mean, I've gone from floppy disks to CDs to portable hard drives, to the memory stick. And I've got data on my portable hard drive and some of my 16 gigabyte memory sticks that's at least 10 years old. But, you know, that's personal use. I think the problem that you run into if you're talking about a business is that if these are documents that you may have to present sometime to prove a point, it's the certifiability that these documents haven't been altered over the course of 10 years or so. Back to you, Dick.